Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for this week's review of the defense from this game against the Steelers in the wild card. Joining me to do this is Jake Vogel. Jake, how are you doing?
Doing pretty well, Ken. How about yourself?
Hey, Jake, life is good. We're hopefully having a great month of football here. Ravens are looking good. They're about to have to face a re-referendum on the MVP award. Not that the MVP award has actually been decided versus a angry Bills fan group, but the game will actually be decided on the field.
Yep. That's the good thing. In a lot of ways, it would probably be nice for some Ravens fans to kind of, you know, put this one on paper, depending on how you view the two teams. But I mean, the game's going to be played in at least Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, you know, have their own control over it.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of the 2000 game at Tennessee. That game had a lot of hype before it, and you've probably seen if you watch the America's game and things like that, that, you know, some of the things that Billick had said in advance that had been captured, and then they put them on the board, and they tried to embarrass the Ravens kind of publicly before the game began. And then the Ravens went out there and kicked their ass. And it was a fairly even game that the Ravens had a couple of very big plays in, is the way to really talk about it. And Tennessee missed a bunch of field goals, but it was a nice, great feeling there. It was, for many years, that was the best in-person experience I'd ever had at a football game. And I'm kind of hoping this Buffalo game is similar, and you get about one every 12 years. And it wasn't the Super Bowl in either case. It was the Mile High Miracle game. It was that 2000 game at Tennessee. Maybe it's this 2024 game at Buffalo. We can hope.
Yeah, I definitely hope so.
Ravens take the first step, though, against the Steelers. The home playoff game certainly meant a lot to the season ticket holders. We would have loved another one to come right away. Now it'll take a Chiefs loss as well as a Ravens win over Buffalo. Not the likeliest of exactas, but still a possibility. The Texans going in to be the Chiefs is probably the significantly bigger long shot.
I agree with that. I would say the Texans defense looked really strong. It was against a Greg Roman coached offense. You know, some Ravens fans still have a lot of disdain for him. Obviously what he did in 2019 with Lamar and, you know, a little bit after that in 2020 as well, was pretty special, but there has been some shortcomings in his offense, and Justin Herbert definitely showed that as well, you know, just with his own play. But yeah, that Texans defense has some really talented players in the secondary, and that could give Kansas City a little bit of trouble. But, just like anyone else, I expect the Chiefs to win.
Yeah. Well, I'm in the same place as you. The big thing, the Texans did not match up well against the Ravens because they were very small on defense. And even though they're fast, and Will Anderson's a hell of a pass rusher, and the guy they have on the other side,
Danielle Hunter,
is very good as well. They're just not big at all. And they're not big in particular because they've got more penetrating linemen than really beefy guys. And the Ravens just pushed them around all over the field. You know, even a fairly large team like the Steelers, who has some bigger bodies like Cam Hayward and And even some of their other guys who are a little softer on the inside, the Ravens really pushed them around in this game. We'll talk about the offense a little bit on on the offense show tomorrow. But I thought it was an awful lot of fun to watch the Ravens run the ball straight down the Steelers' throat.
I agree completely. I'm looking forward to the Buffalo game, but I do know they have a number of guys back in this one that were not playing in our first matchup this year.
But not Stephon Diggs is with the Texans now. The wide receiver has been out the whole year.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Diggs is on the Texans, but Matt Milano was out for a long time for them. And then also Bernard, I believe he was either out for the Ravens game or he got injured during the game. So kind of their whole linebacking core wasn't really out there against us.
Well, that's Milano in particular has been a Ravens nemesis for years. I watched him in the game today. He's playing with a brace. He looks like he's playing almost in a Ray Lewis brace to get that arm right. Don't know how effective he will be, and I'll be interested to kind of look at some PFF grades and see some analysis from the game. One of the guys who looked like absolute crap in this game, and again, I'll talk about this more on the offense show, Patrick Queen looked terrible in this game. And it wasn't just a couple of plays where he's, put at arm's length by Derrick Henry and then didn't even decide to try and make a tackle on that play. He's just completely disinterested, disdaining contact the whole night. Tomlin went to the podium and he talked about fatigue being a factor. And there were some bad fourth down decisions were honestly a big part of that. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter was, I don't think it was fatigue with Queen. I think he was actually completely disengaged. And I wonder if he might have already gotten some indication from the Steelers that they're not going to pick up his contract next year, because the contract is very favorably written for the Steelers that they can really get rid of him after 1 year. And I'd be after watching the film from that game, if I were in the Steelers front office, I'd pull the trigger on that right now. I wouldn't bring him back.
No. Yeah. Yeah. He hasn't been nearly as good as I'm sure a lot of people expected him to be this year. EDC made a smart move. You can only pay one inside linebacker. Roquan didn't really start out the year looking nearly as strong, but despite that, he's played pretty well down the back half of the season, and even made All-Pro honors. I don't know if he was second team or what, but first team All-Pro.
I think he's first team. They have four first teamers, and it was Ricard.
Lamar,
not Derrick Henry. Roquan and Hamilton, right? Or Roquan and Humphrey.
I couldn't remember if Humphrey was like a first teamer in the slot. That's how they did it.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll have to go back and look at that, but I thought Roquan was a first team all pro. I could be wrong, but they had six in total. They had 2 seconds as well. So anyway, outstanding, honor for Roquan, whether or not this year he's completely deserving of it. I think there may be a little bit of voter confirmation bias or whatever you call it, mm-hmm. when something like has a shadow effect that lasts for an additional year kind of thing. That used to be, it would last for 5 years, before PFF came along. So at least that's kind of corrected itself. But this is it's a good benefit for Roquan. Got to think that all these Pro Bowls and all these All-Pro nominations are probably going to cost the Ravens some significant bonus dollars. I don't know that a lot of their incentives were based on that, but they got to have some little amount in there, I would think.
Absolutely. And, even outside of that, you just think about the huge year that Kyle Van Noy had, the 10-sack season for Adafe Owe, that was impressive, and a number of those guys. I don't know what kind of adjustment there would be for Fa'alele getting an alternative Pro Bowl nod. I don't know if that really counts for anything, but certainly the amount of time he's been on the field playing, that can kind of get into things.
Yeah, so he won't get anything for being a Pro Bowl guy, but there is some pool that all the teams have to already pay into that could be paid out, and he could get some additional money from that. And I think he could get an escalator out of that. So he might instead of making $1 million next year, it might make $2.5 million or something. And that would be additional money. Falele, honestly, we just finished with the offensive line. He looked really good in this game. So we'll see how good things were. The guy who didn't look so great was Ronnie Stanley. Ronnie Stanley having a lot of trouble with Highsmith in this game.
I agree. And then on top of that, just the glaring thing watching the game live were the penalties. He had at least two, I think, false starts, which, you know, it's not the worst penalty, but it's, you know, still pretty frustrating to see.
Yeah. All right. Well, in terms of flipping over the defense and making sure we address this, because there's so much positive on the offense and there is positive on the defense too. The game was not without concern because of this spate of deep passes in the second half. They had five passes of 25 plus yards that Wilson hit on. It hadn't been a problem for many weeks for the Ravens. They've been absolutely locking that down. But they had some very clear communication problems that were occurring in the secondary. If you want a deep dive into this, take a look at my article this week. It goes through not every single play here, but it goes through most of them. So, you know, the things that happened are Washington, you probably remember, allowed that 25-yard play over the middle to Austin where he laid a huge hit on him. I don't really blame Washington for that play. That most of the time that ball comes out. When the way he hit Calvin Austin. Yeah.
Yep.
Austin on that play. But then Tre'Davious White was beaten by Mike Williams and he committed a worse mistake by falling down at the catch point. So that Williams got a fair number of yards after the catch. So they get 21 plus 16 throw. Then of course, Brandon Stevens got beat deep twice. The first one was probably the bigger concern. It was the third play on that first drive where they had three big plays, went into the end zone to Van Jefferson. It looked like Stevens almost passed the receiver off, but he certainly wasn't playing the kind of sticky man he can play. And you couldn't tell from the TV, but you could really see at the ballpark, Hamilton was pissed. And I mean, unbelievably pissed. It wasn't a matter of Hamilton thought he made a mistake, which is kind of what they were intimating at on TV. Hamilton was furious with Stevens over not carrying that man deep. And I think there was an underneath target, might have been Freiermuth in the center of the field that I think he wanted to release to Hamilton. But it's one of those plays that clearly they were not on the same page. And unfortunately, you know, we haven't seen very much of that. It's not a good thing to pop up right now.
Right. Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, I'm sure we'll get into the players that were not so good in this game. And Stevens would be at the top of that list, but certainly Hamilton was frustrated. You could see that live at home as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Stevens also allowed a 26-yard play, which was more common, a more big bodied back shoulder kind of throw. And that was Pickens. Yeah. It was Pickens right on the sideline. Went up high and got the ball, which is fine. Pickens is going to do that. He's going to tap in occasionally. But Stevens completely ran by the play because, as Stevens is wont to do, he never found the ball in the air and is highly susceptible to the back shoulder. So Stevens having a tough finish to this year. And I don't think he's looking like a guy who's going to create a big comp pick for the Ravens. Like, he has a big contract coming this offseason. I don't honestly know how the bidding will go on him, and I really wonder whether the Ravens would even be interested in retaining him at this point, or whether they feel like they need to move on.
Yeah, my opinion is that the Ravens probably let him go somewhere else. Maybe they could get like a seventh round comp value, which probably comes out in the wash ultimately. But it's been a tough year for him. Where, you know, coming into this year, we were talking about, he looked like a guy that the Ravens might want to sign early. And man, that's just really gone poorly for him.
Yep. I think, and maybe that's his value to the Ravens, is that he's a cautionary tale for the other end of third year players to say, look, you could have a great year, but you could have the year Brandon Stevens had at the wrong time. And then look where your value will be. And the Ravens got a lot of third-year guys they need to extend. So, Travis Jones, Isaiah Likely, Linderbaum now is really priced into, they got to extend him now situation. And There's some others that I always forget. Ardarius Washington's an important one. Adafi Owe is another one who has the fifth year option still to play under, but
Hamilton, as you mentioned, Linderbaum, same class.
Yeah, Hamilton is actually, they can wait one more year on Hamilton if they want to, because they can afford him on the fifth year contract, but they really probably ought to do it this offseason too, and they probably will. But Afalele would be in the same category, actually. The Ravens now, I think, we're getting very close to the point where they got to make a decision on Fa'alele. And I don't think he has a ton of value across the league right now, but if he has another season like that, he will. And so the Ravens probably need to say, is there a divisible amount that we want to pay Daniel Fa'alele to make it worth him to tack on 3 years?
Agree with that. I wouldn't want to spend too much on him yet, but maybe do something similar to McCary or what's his name?
James Hurst. Alec.
Yeah, James Hurst. That's what I was thinking of. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're going to do that, you'll be committing $3 to $4 million per year, maybe $4 million per year over a 3 year deal. That would be a lot of money. I'm not saying no to it. I'm just saying that it's got to be one of the considerations. And there's kind of a prisoner's dilemma for all of the players here, that they all are going to get a deal and there's only going to be one deal. They're all going to get, you know, the Ravens will try and have several offers out, float them, and see who bites. The same thing also happens in the baseball draft. You have more players that you can really sign with the dollars you have available to you. And so you have to be careful with those dollars. And what you'll often do is you might draft 10 pitchers you like between rounds 11 and 25, say, and along with a few other position players too. And you make offers to 8 of them to start with, or 6 of them to start with, and you see who takes it. And and it'd be at different levels slotted by where they are, but you hopefully can sign several of them. And you can never sign all of them though.
Yeah, completely agree with that.
All right. One of the things about the day Wilson had, he had an opportunity set that was right on average. The Ravens did not commit a lot of resources. We'll get into that on the pass rush, to rush the quarterback. And he had a fair amount of ample time and space opportunities. But this was the first time since week 10 that the coverage unit really did not perform well, meaning that the quarterback significantly outperformed his opportunity set. And in this case, Wilson outdid it by about 52 yards in this game. And that was honestly very disappointing. This is the wrong time for this to be coming along. And it's not a very good team. It's not the kind of team you would figure in this weather would be able to do that to the Ravens.
Yeah, I completely agree. It was frustrating to see the coverage really just kind of fall apart there in the third quarter, primarily. Fourth quarter tightened up, at least in the second half of that fourth quarter.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it really was the third quarter, wasn't it? It was the big problem. I always make a trip over to the opposing boards to see what they're talking about after a game like this. The Steelers fans, probably no topic is consuming them more right now than trying to get rid of Mike Tomlin. Unlike the Ravens' small vocal minority that wants to get rid of Harbaugh, and I realize how small this minority is now because I can't get anyone to come on a pod and really talk as a panelist or make a good pros and cons list that says Harbaugh should be fired. By the way, if you're out there, DM me on Twitter. I'm trying to look for people who want the fire Harbaugh side. Everybody's coming out pro Harbaugh. I need people who want the fire Harbaugh side and really want to present that and say, look, he hasn't done A and B and C and D. And while I accept the fact that he did F and G, I need him to do more of these things, or we can get that from somebody else kind of thing. Just a very well-reasoned argument. The more well-reasoned, the better. Anyway, end of that PSA for a minute. But I would like to hear from you if you've got that. But the Steelers fans are furious over the situation, and they didn't even really get into the game management component, which was, I thought, one of the real big stories of this game, that the Tomlin got very badly outcoached from a game management perspective by Harbaugh. I have two plays. Again, more detail in my article if you want to go out there and read it, but I'm going to talk through the math very quickly here. All right. So the first play is a 4th-and-2 at their own 38. It was in the first quarter. The Ravens were up 7-0. It's not the sort of play that you go for if you're an NFL coach named anything but Brandon Staley. Okay. And if you're Harbaugh, even your guys, your headset elves are chirping in your ear to go for it. And they're telling you it's a good move to go for it, but you're not buying it because you know better and you know the flow of the game or this or that. And so it's not the kind of thing that you understand naturally or that somebody like Tomlin is going to easily accept. But I'm sure he has headset elves as well, who are got to be some very frustrated people, by the way. Have you heard Tomlin headset elf? And he's telling you to go for it all the time. And you lead the league in cowardly punts every year. You know, what's the, that's a, by the way, that's a real statistic that somebody has is cowardly punts. So anyway, 4th and 2 at the 38. Here's the basic math of the thing. The Ben Baldwin bot said, very slight positive gain of 0.5% in win probability. That doesn't seem like much to gamble on, but the entire span of win probability in play was only about 5% at that point. If they'd failed to make the first down, their chance would have dropped to 6% to win the ball game. If they make it, it goes up to 11%. So the total amount of win probability in play was 5 percentage points. And they had 0.5 percentage point of advantage. So it's like 1/10 of the total span they had as an advantage. It's very much like if I came up to you, Jake, and I said, how about you pick a coin out of your own pocket? We'll flip it. And if it's heads, I'll give you $55. And if it's tails, you give me $45. It's too good a bet to pass up. You know, you'd be all kinds of suspicious about what kind of crooked I was, but it's too good a bet to pass up. And that's what Tomlin did basically on that 4th and 2 situation. And the problem is people will say, it's just being conservative and he wanted to do this. He wanted to do that. There's risk in every direction. And the risk really bore its way out by the fact that they missed on 2 4th and short situations where they had a great opportunity to increase win probability. And then they end up at the end of the game going for it on 4th and 15. I mean, what's the logic in that? It's just you didn't know that was coming, but you also let the game get away by not going for these easy 4th downs early in the game. There's one other thing about this that I got to say, and then I want to hear your thoughts on it too. The 4th and inches that they didn't go for, there's after that great stop by Ardarius Washington on Freiermuth, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. But that 4th and inches, Ben Baldwin bot didn't even produce anything. And I think the reason is it's less than a yard. So the distance that he needs, whether it's, 6 inches or a foot or 3 feet, it actually matters. So in terms of what their percentage chance was to make it, so that the bot doesn't want to estimate it if it's under a yard kind of thing. And so it would have been a big pickup in win probability. And for some reason, Tomlin thought, and the announcers were actually clowning on him for that one. That's right. Really bad when you know, people like that have it, but terrible choices. And I can't even imagine, how the Pittsburgh fans feel about that, but they're not really talking about that as much as they're talking about messages stale. I don't want to hear about another winning season when we've had 8 straight years of no playoff wins.
Right. Yeah, it's a tough situation. I agree with you. Tomlin makes some pretty boneheaded decisions when it comes to punting and just game management. I think a lot of it kind of goes into what they've had at quarterback over the past, 5 years. But regardless, he could do a better job. I mean, I think on that 4th and really short, you just put Justin Fields in there or even Russell Wilson and do the tush push and you're probably going to get it, even though I think the Ravens are going to give their best effort. That's a tough play to stop. And punting there definitely was a cowardly move.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a strange one. The other thing that Tomlin talked about in his press conference too, is he said, as the game progressed, we were on the field for too long defensively. We couldn't get off the field. And fatigue became an issue. Well, there were some other things going on besides fatigue, as I mentioned with Patrick Queen, but he is not an innocent bystander to that fatigue. By not going for it on 4th down, he allowed the Ravens to run additional plays relative to the Steelers.
Right.
And there's two sides to that. The first one is you punt the ball away and you give the ball to the Ravens on the 5 yard line or whatever it was, and they drive 95 yards for the touchdown. First of all, that's a ton of plays in itself, but the trade off on one of the redraw values of not making it if you go for it on fourth down is that you give the Ravens a shorter field with fewer plays and you don't get your defenses tired. And that doesn't even enter the calculus for him. So right. I thought that was, you know, it's incredibly, he's a very eloquent man, and you can see why so many people really like to hear him talk, but every answer, particularly he's frustrated himself. He does a good job of not showing that at the podium. And yet every answer is so pithy and misdirected. I could understand the Steelers fans' frustration at hearing him after loss in the playoffs like this.
Yeah, I completely understand and agree with that.
You think there's any chance that this is the end of the Tomlin era? Or do you think that he'll still be
there? I think he's still going to be there. Pretty sure there was a report that Tomlin's staying as well. So, yeah.
That's where I am as well. Let's move on a little bit. The Ravens won the missed tackle battle in this game, 14-7. Very surprising things. So by a 2-1, they had fewer missed tackles, but they still missed a higher percentage of their tackles in this game. So the Ravens missed 15.2% of their tackles and the Steelers missed 14.6. And that was indicative of two things. One is the Ravens ran a ton more plays, 72 to 45. It was in that range, 72 to 44, I think, if you take out the kneels and the spikes, maybe 70 to 44. So you ran a ton more plays. But the other thing was that the Ravens ran the ball almost exclusively and the Steelers passed the ball almost exclusively. So when there were incomplete passes, of course, those don't result in a tackle. Somebody goes out of bounds, doesn't result in a tackle. So that led itself to that. But I don't think I've ever seen that before, by the way, where the team that had distinctly fewer missed tackles still at a higher missed tackle rate.
Yeah, that's a wild stat, but definitely the sheer volume of plays that Baltimore had.
Mild concern for you at all that the Ravens turn in a poor tackling effort at a point like this?
Definitely a concern. And I think a lot of those missed tackles were on running backs. You know, certainly some on
running backs on pass plays,
you know,
right?
Down the field.
Yeah.
Yes, on pass plays. And I think that particular skill set and design is something that Buffalo likes to use a lot. So, you know, seeing that in this game and then kind of forecasting this upcoming game against Buffalo is a little bit scary.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I did see the opening line on the game against Buffalo is Buffalo -1.5. I know a lot of people were saying they thought the Ravens would be favored in the game. Jeremy Kahn in particular came out very strong that the Ravens would be favored. He still thinks the line will move. But that's an interesting one. It's not much, you know, it's hit 1.5 is almost a pick 'em in today's NFL, the way that people always try to tie a football game, but it's something. And we'll see how that plays out.
I think it's a positive for Baltimore. Anytime that you get to be the underdog, even though it's not much of an underdog going to an away stadium and it only being a 1.5, you know, favoring Buffalo, it basically saying, you know, we're kind of favoring Baltimore here, but they have the home field, which is kind of 3 points more or less. So, but still, I'm glad that Baltimore's, you know, not going in as a 3-point favorite right now, and Buffalo's going to have this huge chip on their shoulder. Yeah.
You're right. There's something to be said for that for sure. They're already going to have a huge chip on their shoulder about all the MVP stuff. So yeah. Whether or not that actually ends up happening, it could be we get to the Super Bowl weekend where they announce the awards and it turns out Lamar didn't win the MVP. But it's interesting because Polymarket definitely is not saying that it's 100% yet. They're saying about 70%. Lamar right now, where it was, you know, 75% Allen before the first team All Pro came out. So I wouldn't count it before it's hatched at this point. It's certainly been a reversal. It's not a good position. Mm-hmm. You know, you're down a run in the bottom of the ninth instead of up a run in the bottom of the ninth, but it's not a zero either. I completely agree, by the way, on the chip on your shoulder thing, but Buffalo fans, the vitriol, which is built up between these two fan bases over the Lamar discussion, the Lamar Allen discussion, is so extreme. I can't even get it. I mean, it's beyond any level of rational. It's very difficult. And I'm going to say, honestly, I think the Bills fans are worse. The Ravens fans, I see less attempts to splinter off pieces of data and try and make that into an argument by itself, which is the weakest form of MVP arguments. It's basically, you really want to take the whole season. You want to take it, you know, if you want to make arguments about one player had a better cast, well, that's okay. But you all got to also then be open to the notion that one player played a much weaker schedule. Mm-hmm. And that's something Bills fans don't want any part of. You know, if they have a lot of statistics they put out, which are how did Allen pass when under pressure, throwing on one foot on a Tuesday kind of thing. Which are, you know, that's the kind of thing. It's these splintered right. components, subcomponents of the thing, rather than looking at the whole body of work as a whole. And the truth is, the high level numbers all favor Lamar, which obviously makes it something where they feel like they have to search for things. But when in some of the ways, the most important high level number the Bills fans had was that they'd beaten both the number one seeds in each conference. But then you look at that right. a little deeper, they've actually only gone 3-3 against winning teams. 2-3 against playoff teams. And they've also, at the same time, the Ravens have gone 9-3 and had the second most wins ever against winning teams in a single season, trailing only the 2023 Ravens, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously part of that is sample size, where Buffalo didn't have the same amount of teams that the Ravens did that were in that playoff discussion. But still, I mean, those numbers, you know, it definitely favor the Ravens in a big way. And then on top of that, you talk about the point differential, and Baltimore is just blowing every freaking team out of the water. I think the Lions are the second closest, and Baltimore's like plus 100 something, and
157,
the Lions are in like the 80s, I believe. It's a pretty big
Buffalo,
separation.
No, Buffalo and the Ravens are tied at plus 157, but the difference in strength of schedule is very significant, because their strength of schedule, and this is for wins. This is for wins. Strength of schedule wins is at 529 versus 467. And strength of victory. No, that's not. Strength of schedule for wins is just your.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yep.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Strength of schedule, that's what that is. It's 529 versus 467. Strength of victory is how many wins do the teams that you beat have this season? And there, the Ravens hold a 525 to 448 advantage. So, the points are important, but if I'm looking at that, I've got to look at the schedule and say, who did you run up those scores against, and say, you know, the Ravens have just played a tougher competition, a tougher, more competitive schedule. And yeah, it's great to win your division every year if you play in the AFC East or in the AFC South, for that matter, Houston. And right. It's just, yeah. All right, let's keep moving. I don't want to hold us up for too long here. Let's talk about the first down, or sorry, and third down. The Steelers were 1 of 5 in the first half, which is a great start for the Ravens. But then they did go 4 of 6 in the second half on third down, including 3 in a row with long pass plays on that first touchdown drive. Were you worried at that point in the game?
I mean, that early. I don't think I was worried on their first drive necessarily of scoring, but certainly them being able to convert big plays didn't bode well for the defense. I said, okay, here we go again. The defense is going to fail, but that means the offense just needs to play aggressive as they should in general. I am not a big fan of playing not to lose, and I think the Ravens got a little too conservative in the game, but you can't fault them when they're running the ball so well. So it's kind of a catch-22. But yeah, I think after one score, you're feeling okay. But after the second, then you're like, okay, this is becoming too much.
So they scored to make it 21-7. Then the Ravens responded with the four-play drive for the score. And then the Steelers scored again, which was on the long play to Pickens on the right sideline, right where he got up between Washington and
Wiggins.
Wiggins.
Yeah, it was Wiggins and Washington. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of a bad play for both of those defenders, but fortunately it didn't end up being the end of the game. I don't like being super conservative either, but on the other hand, I really love it when you can just impose your will over a team that knows the run is coming and can't do a damn thing about it.
Yeah. It's definitely a fine balance. Seeing 3 runs in a row is great when you get the first down, and it's really frustrating when you have to punt.
Yep. Good point. There's kind of the two sides of that coin, isn't it? They allowed only 2 first downs by rush this entire game. They only had 10 runs that were not kneels, and they had a long of 5 in this game. And that was something I think we looked at this game and said, the Steelers, if they're going to be effective against the Ravens, are probably going to need to run the ball effectively and break some tackles with their 2 big tackle breaking backs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the Ravens did a good job. Like you said, against the run, it's really one of the breaking points of the defense currently is in the passing game, allowing easy yards to running backs. I think that's what the Ravens want to give up the most. And sometimes they play it a little bit soft because they're more worried about other things. But that's easy money. And if there's a patient quarterback and a good running back, that match up well against Baltimore, it might be this upcoming week.
They're trying to take advantage, I think, a lot of Harrison when he plays off ball. He's a kind of a slower recognition linebacker in terms of getting into the spot he needs to cover a running back. They used him to blitz several times in this game, but he's a guy who, as a Sam linebacker, I don't think of him as being the same coverage liability, but then when he's backing off the ball, his mission is more clearly ordained, set for him in terms of what he's supposed to do there. It's just coming off the ball. Coming from off ball, there just may be too much for him to worry about.
Yeah. And I think Pittsburgh did a good job a number of times keeping the Ravens heavy personnel on the field, which includes Malik Harrison. And some of the defensive linemen that you don't necessarily attribute with pass rushing success, like Broderick Washington, Brent Urban, Michael Pierce. Those guys were on the field for multiple plays in a row on different occasions, and the Steelers were able to pass out of that, with some success.
Yeah. Yeah. Pierce had a pretty good game in total with what he accomplished. No defensive fouls for the Ravens in this game. They had 3 false starts on offense. One of those stalled a drive. I think that was Rosengarten's. But they had no defensive fouls, and that it's been a while since they've been in that position. They may have had one other game this year where that was true, but that's an exceptional game.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime that you don't have a DPI or a roughing the passer is a good day.
We've talked a little bit about the inside linebacker position already, but is there anything about the way they're using Board and Harrison and switching for more on Board on passing downs? And then they still have Board in there on first down when they need Harrison as an outside linebacker, which is kind of a very weird package quirk that I've never seen for another team. It's just amazing. This is the Ravens. This is happening with.
Yeah. The more I see of Board, the more comfortable I am with him as the second inside linebacker. I still don't really love the Ravens position group there. I mean, Roquan is good. He still may struggle a little bit in coverage, but Board is clearly the better option over Malik Harrison, and they're not even using Trenton Simpson. I don't know if he's hurt or I know just for a while this season they haven't even gone back to him at all. So I think it's pretty much going to be Roquan and Board going forward in the obvious passing situations.
Yeah, I would agree. And in really obvious passing situations, like when they get to third and nine, they just go to a dime package anyway and take Board off the field. So Board is a guy that, you know, second and 10, whatever. It's almost like the old Danelle Ellerbe role. They used to have McClain on first down, Danelle Ellerbe on second and 10, and then a dime package on third down. It's a little bit like that. You mentioned Trenton Simpson, and he's a guy I'm wondering, where does he stand with the organization at this point? Have they basically given up on him? Like, they might draft another inside linebacker, or are they at a point where they're still hopeful, but there's something that's a year away? I don't hope that it's an injury. Obviously, he's still out there playing special teams for the Ravens. So I don't really think it is. But the only time he's gotten in recently in the last 4 or 5 weeks now is if it's at the end of a game and he plays like the last series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, my opinion on that, since I don't know the ins and outs of the organization, is that the team will definitely consider drafting an inside linebacker, but there's still hope in this young player's career to develop. I mean, you look at so many guys in Ravens history that, you know, it took 3-4 years to really get going. And he was a young prospect as it was. So I think there's still a chance for him, but if there's a good inside linebacker staring at you in the third, fourth round, I think the Ravens might pull the trigger and at least add competition.
Right. Yeah, that's where I'd be. It's not like, honestly, either of the guys in Harrison or Board couldn't be beaten out for their job. Harrison, because of his role on special teams as well. And by the way, Board is now wearing a captain's patch. He was one of the 6 guys awarded a captain's patch. And I thought that was interesting that he got one over Harrison, because it would have seemed like the logical choice. But Wallace and Harrison would be my bets to get the two qualified veteran contracts that the Ravens can assign next year. Now, they don't always use them all. They don't always use all of them. They might not have to pay that for Wallace, for example. But if they do, it provides them additional negotiating friction in terms of them leaving town or not, if they can pay an extra million that doesn't count against the cap.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't even thought about that for Tylan Wallace, but he has been, you know, a positive player on offense this year in a number of points, including this game on that, what was it, like 2nd and 20 because of a holding call, and he gets 21 yards, which is, you know, fantastic. So, yeah, I'd be all for it, bringing him back on a, you know, inexpensive deal, and, you know, he can compete and kind of have the same role that he's in right now.
Defensive line dominated the run game as we hoped. They were okay as a pass rush unit, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, but really dominated the run game as hoped. I thought they did a great job of denying space. I was kind of projecting the Steelers would go heavy in this game and we'd see a lot of base defense. That's really just the opposite. The Steelers, they played 4 different tight ends, but they didn't play a lot of total tight end snaps. So it was only about 1.39 per play that they used. They didn't use any 6th offensive linemen. The Steelers have sometimes done that in the past to the Ravens, and they never used a fullback. So basically, that's pretty light as NFL teams go.
Yeah, I agree with that. Darnell Washington, as you know, and you've talked about, he is a freak of a tight end. And, you know, he could be an extra offensive lineman for a number of teams, especially if he added a little bit more mass. And then Cam Hayward is really that tweener. He played his brother, Connor Hayward. He's really that tweener, H-back, tight end, fullback. He did play a little bit, but I don't know if he was ever aligned in that true fullback position. But I think he was, you know, used very sparingly. And like you mentioned, there were just a couple of times or, you know, however many with Washington and Freiermuth both out there at the same time. And I don't think they ever really got into much more big bodies. You know, Connor Hayward played a little bit, but I don't have his snap counts in front of me.
Right. I've got it here. Connor Hayward played 5 snaps. Yeah. Michael Pruitt played 11 snaps. We've seen him. I think he had a touchdown catch in one of the games. Darnell Washington played 21, which is amazingly 46% of the snaps. It'd be about a third in a normal game, but not this one. And Freiermuth played 27 snaps to lead all the tight ends. So they really, they spread them out, and they didn't use a lot of any one guy, which kind of leads us into packages, because one of the things the Ravens can't do anymore, the Ravens only activated 3 safeties for this game. So their backup, their, okay, well, Kane was their 3rd safety. I don't think the Ravens were planning to put Citizen Kane, you know, on the back end in this game. I think they were planning to move Stevens there if they need him. They've kind of indicated that the last couple of times that Hamilton has missed a few plays here or there, that's been Stevens that's gone to the back end. Right. So, by the way, that change, if it were to happen, generally speaking, I'm not even sure I'd be opposed to it. Might work out, might not, but it would be something that if you want to use Stevens more in the back end and White more at cornerback, I probably wouldn't have a real problem with it.
No, I agree. I think getting Stevens a little bit further away from the ball is not a bad idea. You know, he just has to have the knack for playing, you know, deep safety, or probably not deep necessarily, but at least split safety. Right. And I think he could do that. And I think in that role, there's less of a target for the offense to funnel their offense through. So I'd be here for it.
I am too. And there's a couple things about this. First is I understand why people think there's a target on Stevens, and that's often the case. You find the weakest link on your opponent and you just want to throw at them. Stevens had a pretty good year last year, so I don't really look at it in that same way. I look at it as Stevens in a bad spot for his particular skill set. So a sticky man coverage guy like that, I kind of want either as a cover 3 corner where he's going to come downhill and maybe be making more judgments, more instinctive play with his eyes, or I want him on the backfield and a half, the back end in a split field role where he's doing the same thing. He's reading the quarterback, trying to figure out where he needs to be. And he has experience in that. He played a lot of the back end at SMU. He's played some with the Ravens. He's a guy who probably could play back there, and it might be time to try and give him another chance at a different position. Could even be a reason why he'd be back with the Ravens on a 1-year deal. I'm just not convinced the market's going to be that great for him. And you know, the Ravens know who he is, and I think that they may decide, hey, look, we'll take you back, but you got to be willing to play safety, or you're willing to play corner, and that might be something he'd be willing to do. Or he might take even less money and go somewhere else where they can, he can play corner the whole time, because I think he probably wants to get paid here at some point. Makes certainly generational financial sense to do so.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that.
Real quickly, they played 4 snaps of base defense. That's it. So didn't have a lot of opportunity to get Brent Urban on the field. He played about 8 snaps, I think, in total. Maybe it was a couple more than that. Big Nipple, they paid 0. They didn't even have the additional safety really to play it. And the Steelers didn't really give him a lot of reason to play it because they didn't play a lot of 12. The standard nickel, they played 33 snaps, 6.6 yards per play on those. That was most of their defensive snaps, obviously 3/4 of their total, because they had 44 non-kneel snaps in this game. And then they played 7 snaps of 4 corner dime, and allowed 7.6 yards per play on those. I'm actually surprised it was as low as that with all of the third and forever plays they gave up in that third quarter.
Right.
Let's see if there's anything else. We got White replaced Humphrey for that single play. Humphrey seemed to go out with some sort of an injury to his thumb, which was very concerning at the time. Right. And then he came back on the next drive and had some sort of great pry out play after the ball was dead. You remember that where he stopped?
Yeah, it looked like maybe the Ravens were able to get on the ball, and the refs had already blown it dead, and I'm guessing it never was going to be a fumble, but it looked good.
Yeah, it was, and it looked good from Humphrey's perspective. I didn't actually see if it was his same hand, but that's probably a dominant hand thing. Like, I can't even imagine trying to go in with my left hand and trying to force a fumble. I'd be going clubbing with the right hand, and I think that normally pass rushers club with their dominant hand to try and get home against a quarterback. But this is I imagine that's what he did. And I can't remember though on the play whether it was his dominant or non-dominant hand or his right hand that he actually was pointing to his thumb was hurt. I don't know if you remember it as he went to the sideline.
I don't remember exactly which hand it was either. I would just be guessing. It'd be 50-50, but I have no clue.
Well, it's on the video if anyone wants to go back and look at that play where he left the field. What else we got to talk about? Let's talk about the pass rush a little bit. So Ravens allowed 11 ample time space opportunities in this game. They had 13 pressures. That relationship is what I've really been looking at this year as defining how good your pass rush is. Now, the Steelers did have a fairly heavy, again, ball out quick component to their offense. They had 10 of those. One of the things you really kind of see when I look at Wilson is that he's a guy who's uncomfortable in a clean pocket. And that often may be a case, not necessarily if there's pressure coming, but he can't see over the line because he's short.
Right.
And so he wants to move around and skitter around. It's like, why are you moving around? The pocket is completely clean. No, but he's not Joe Flacco.
Yeah, definitely. It was a pretty decent game for the pass rush. I thought Kyle Van Noy played pretty well. One of the sacks, he got really quick pressure. It was a later sack from Matabike. He got the pressure kind of up into Wilson's face.
Yep.
By the way, Warren is a heck of a pass protector or pass blocker for a running back. He did a great job all game, in my opinion. He got Kyle Van Noy in there, but the pressure forced Russell Wilson out of the pocket to the offensive left side, and Matabike's pursuit was just really fast, and he was able to sack Wilson on that play. But most of this game, I'd say that the sacks were very much intertwined with the coverage. I don't know how many of them were super quick sacks where coverage wasn't necessarily the focal point. I think that they worked hand in hand like usual, but good game for Matabike in terms of, getting home. He had the two sacks. Owe was really good in this game as well. I think he graded out extremely high for PFF. He might have been the number one guy for the Ravens. And then Michael Pierce, as you mentioned earlier, he had the sack early in the game.
Nice cleanup sack.
Yeah, I mean, solid effort by the guys. I thought Tavius Robinson never got home, but he had some good pressure on Wilson, as Wilson was trying to escape to the right a number of times. I thought it was a solid effort. And, there's some defensive linemen that did their job too and don't get as much credit, like Broderick Washington. I thought he played a really good game. Against the run, he had a nice pass deflection. And Travis Jones did his thing. He just didn't get any major pressures in there.
Yeah, I've got one pressure for Jones. He also had a quarterback hit, by the way. It's off screen, but it was in the game book, so I'll trust that it was recorded properly. I want to go through the ATS BOQ pressure thing. Ample time and space, 11 plays, 32% of the time they had ample time and space, which is a little too high. Then they threw Wilson threw for 10.5 yards per play on those throws. There's one sack in there. You mentioned there being some late sacks in the game. The late sack that occurred was a late leaving of the pocket where it ended up being an S0 where he kind of reached out to the left sideline, but Matabike chased him at right at the line of scrimmage for one of the sacks. And then the other one, I thought the same thing about you on the fast Matabike sack on that S-8 where the initial pressure came from Van Noy. I could not believe how quickly Matabike got off his man and onto Wilson. It's like, I don't think Wilson can outrun Matabike at this point in his career. I think was a time. Yeah. But Matabike is just, he's as quick as can be right now. He's a cat out there.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he's a special player that the Ravens have, despite his numbers really falling back down to earth this year. His athleticism has not gone away from last year. And it's a real weapon as you get into the playoffs to have a defensive lineman. He's not an edge rusher, even though, you know, the Ravens like to put him on the edge and see what kind of matchups they can get that has that kind of speed. It's just so rare that an interior defensive lineman can track down a quarterback the way he can, or you know, chase Josh Allen, you know, outside and at least force him to go out of bounds or slide. It's, you know, the Ravens haven't always had these kind of guys. You know, the defensive history and, you know, the talent that Baltimore's had is, you know, obvious and evident, but it's rare to have a player like Matabike that has that speed and athleticism and can really, you know, chase athletic quarterbacks.
Yeah, the number of interior really great pass rushers they've had is not very great. Trevor Price, Sam Adams was really more of a Travis Jones type. He didn't really get the sacks himself, but he really set up a lot of other people for sacks. When I think about other guys, another guy who could get the sacks and also set up other people was Pernell McPhee. He's one of my favorite Ravens of all time, but that guy was a double team beater of the highest order. First step thunderous, gets in an underneath position, and then can really wreak havoc if there's a looper to peel off half of that block. That often was the case. Tim Jernigan, another one from that same era with McPhee, that was just outstanding. Those guys on the interior together were a great pairing. But you're right. I mean, the players are not that common. When you have a dominating three tech who can win one-on-one matchups, that's pure gold. And the Ravens paid him like he's pure gold.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. I think I said overall, so I don't want to go through all these levels, but Wilson threw really well under pressure in this game, 86 net yards on 13 plays, about 6.6 yards per play, which doesn't sound like a real high number, but then those are the most disadvantaged situations. And he's still getting 6.6 yards a play, 40 yards above expectation on those and 52 above expectation for the game as a whole. So most of his advantage was about three quarters of it was in pressure situations.
And I'd say just off of one play, I could give you
a lot of it.
It was the one where he was backed up into the end zone, basically. And it was that big completion to Calvin Austin that you mentioned earlier across the middle of the field. I'm pretty sure there was some good pressure there. I think Marlon Humphrey was screaming off the outside. You know, it was like a nickel blitz. But Jaylen Warren, once again, good pass protection. He got him to go around the edge, the corner, and Wilson had enough time to really throw a nice laser in there.
Okay, so I have three pressures marked, and actually the one you have is an ample time and space, which doesn't mean there wasn't pressure as of being throws. It just means the pressure developed after 3 seconds.
Okay.
So, but the three I have are the completion to Mike Williams down the left sideline for 37. That was a pressure situation. Then the 21-yard throw, which was a catch and run by a running back. So I think that was, might've been Najee Harris.
That was Najee Harris on the right side of the offense. Yep.
Exactly. Yep. And then the third one was the 26 yard pass, which I believe was the leaping catch by Pickens. where Stevens ran by the play on the left sideline.
Right.
So those are the three I have for being pressure. And that's enough. Those three put together is basically might be over 100% of those yards. Cause there were some sacks in there too. So.
Right. That makes sense.
Now, let's talk about numbers for a minute, and we'll keep this short because we need to come back and do part two of the show here. But Orr, in the entire game, only rushed five twice the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really amazing. I've got that as 19%. That can't be right. It must be an old number or something. But it's 2 out of 34. It should be 6% were 5-plus rushes. And the 2 5-pluses were two plays for minus 4 yards, the minus 4 sack by Pearson, one incomplete pass. I'll say this in general, other elements of deception did not work well in this game, but numbers mm-hmm. did. This may have been a case where if he had it to do over again in the second half, anyway, he might've unleashed the dogs a little more, brought some 5-man rushes and kind of, played it out, or maybe not. You know, I would say I see more Dean Pease in him than I see Wink Martindale in him.
Mm-hmm.
He's more of a let's sit back and see what the coverage can do. And the coverage has really held up since week 11. This was the first game really that we saw any kind of crack in the armor.
I agree with that. I was definitely surprised going through it. How few times that he rushed five. You know, they really like to do the disguise rush where they have, mm-hmm. you know, five guys at the line of scrimmage or six guys at the line of scrimmage and, you know, on some plays and they'll drop two. And they did, you know, they varied that look. Owe dropped a couple of times. And then, of course, other times it's the more standard approach where you drop Roquan and you drop Board. And those guys make a little bit more sense to be dropping versus – you know, your four down linemen, of course. Yeah.
They have both guys on the Sam side, both Owe and Van Noy are fairly qualified in coverage because both of them are quick. In case of Van Noy, he's very experienced at knowing mm-hmm. where he's supposed to be on the field. So generally speaking, that doesn't end up being a problem, but it also fuels what the Ravens really had more with Judon and Bowser, who were legitimately fine coverage players, both of them, that they could be much more flexible with a 4-man rush coming from anywhere. You could blitz off the slot. You could blitz from a linebacker. You could set a safety and creeping down to the line of scrimmage. Ravens have been really good this year, at least in the second half, about not giving up where their off ball blitzes are coming from. So the slot Humphrey has been a guy I always point to in his career, like will creep in and give away his blitz too early. They haven't done that. They've done a good job of right. maintaining their feet set in the middle of the field when they're coming from linebacker and keeping them guessing until the last moment. And, you know, I think that's been good. But generally, if they show six, they're not coming with six. That's the Ravens simulate pressure, and you just don't know which of the six is coming. But it's typically four.
Right.
All right. What else we want to, I think that's it for the first part here. We'll come back. We'll do some individual player discussion. We'll have some mailbag. We'll do a few other things, but talk about MVPs. Maybe you could be ready with a 3-2-1 on MVPs, but Jake, before that, tell folks where they can yep. find you online, ask you a football question if they want to, particularly about the University of Georgia, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I am, on Twitter or X as they call it, at Real Jake Vogel, VOGEL. I love talking about the Georgia Bulldogs and the Baltimore Ravens and then anything else in the realm of football, really. College football, you know, pretty exciting 12-team playoffs. It didn't really go my way this year, but that's okay. Ken, I know you guys are going to be able to go to the game for Notre Dame, so that's pretty exciting.
We're really excited about it, and I'll tell you what, I can't say no to Maureen after everything she contributes to the effort here on the Ravens, but she's really excited about going. It could interfere as much as anything could ever interfere with the analysis of the Bills game, so we may be a day late on things, but we're going to enjoy our trip down to Atlanta.
Yeah, I hope you guys enjoy. Good luck to Notre Dame for sure, and yeah, feel free to reach out to me. I'm, you know, tweeting pretty often, and I'm enjoying the playoff run right now.
And I'd say make sure you give Jake a follow at Real Jake Vogel on Twitter, X. But one thing you'll notice right away is the quality of tweets is very high. And also during draft season, you really want to be following Jake and understanding what's going on. He's a very big part of the process of reviewing an individual position group, but then usually being on the panel as well come draft day. So he's a guy that I really enjoy watching the draft with, and I appreciate all you've contributed to that in the past years, Jake.
Thank you, Ken.
Other folks out there, if you'd like to do a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter, particularly with the offseason coming up. We'll have more time for that. We also will have time before the Super Bowl. And in particular, again, contact me if you have I want to fire John Harbaugh, willing to make a well-thought-out pros and cons list and be on a panel to discuss that concept. But I'd like to hear from you if you are. Thanks again for all you loyal listeners and all you do for us. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.